Welcome back to our weekly podcast. This week's case is over Richard Ramirez. He was an American serial killer that spent most over 2 years of his life raping and torturing more than 25 victims and killed more than a dozen people.
Wow, that's crazy. We also know that he was a troubled kid growing up because of his cousin Mike. Mike returned from fighting in Vietnam and told Ramirez terrible stories and showed images of the torture he would impose on Vietnamese females. His cousin introduced him to drugs, and that led to him committing crimes as well as being a Satan worshiper.
Yeah, and the first crime he was involved in was with his cousin, too. Mike murdered his wife, but Ramirez didn't try to stop the murder. And in 1977, he was sent to a juvenile detention center for several crimes. He was put on probation in 1982 for marijuana possession. He moved to California and continued to commit crimes and had a car theft charge. He committed his first murder on June 28, 1984, killing a 79-year-old victim who was sexually assaulted and stabbed.
It sounds like this guy was seriously insane. Most of his crimes were committed in California homes. He killed at least 15 victims. Let's look at some of the evidence found in the murders. There's a lot of evidence that was found, so closely listen. The big topic this week is fingerprint evidence. Ramirez was identified by a partial fingerprint on a stolen, abandoned car. A witness placed the car at the scene of a Night Stalker attack in Orange County. Homicide detectives linked Ramirez to a murder in June 1984 of a 79-year-old woman. Two of Ramirez's fingerprints were found on the frame of a window screen that had been removed from the woman's ground floor apartment. LAPD were told to scan the car for fingerprints, but they left the car out in the sun for so long that the paint had stripped off, leaving the car useless for finding evidence. The friction between the LAPD and other forces in wanting to crack this case meant vital evidence wasn't being picked up in time and was sometimes lost. A fingerprint was found on the rearview mirror, but detectives didn't know who the fingerprint belonged to due to technology limits at the time. This is when fingerprint analysis came into place. Only when the police had a suspect in custody would they be able to compare and see if the prints matched. When they eventually did catch Ramirez and collect his fingerprints, they matched those they found in the car, linking him to older crimes, including grand theft auto. The system scanned 380,000 fingerprints, finding Ramirez and 9 other suspects within a few minutes. With that information, police were able to use other evidence to convict him.
Fingerprints were the main reason he was identified, so that is definitely important for this case. More evidence that convicted Ramirez includes slash wounds that were found in 5 of his murders. He entered the homes through an unlocked window or door after removing a screen. In 2 cases, he entered through a pet door. In Monrovia, he painted 2 pentagrams. He used the same 4 handguns in murders. It became noticeable that he struck homes in quiet, often remote residential neighborhoods close to the freeways. He was identified by many survivors of the Night Stalker attacks and was linked to many recovered items that had been taken from the crime scenes, such as TVs, stereos, and jewelry. Police found a car in the El Sereno area linked to Ramirez that had a pentagram drawn on the dashboard. In several of the cases, the same footprint kept turning up at the crime scene. Police investigators arrived at a double murder scene on March 28, 1985. They found a shoe print in a flower bed outside of the Whittier home. Within 4 months, they found that the same shoe print at 5 other residential robbery murder scenes throughout the Los Angeles County.
A victim was also able to identify him. A 6-year-old was kidnapped and sexually abused by Ramirez. He called many of the Night Stalker's characteristics, which was especially helpful when Ramirez was finally caught. I think it is amazing how she was able to remember some of the characteristics at her age.
Yeah, that's amazing for her age. Many of you might be wondering how he was never caught. Well, interesting fact, the Night Stalker was actually nearly caught twice. Ramirez was pulled over by the police while he was driving back from the attempted kidnap of a little girl. At the time, the police were low on evidence and didn't realize they had the Night Stalker right in front of them. Ramirez was unable to show the officer a driver's license and was asked to step outside of the car. He overheard the police radio talking about the attempted kidnap and the car they were looking out for, the exact one he was driving. He drew a pentagram on the hood of the car and ran. The second missed opportunity was catching him at the dentist. A dentist card was found in the car, and police called the surgeon to find out if the killer had been to his appointment yet. They were merely days out from crossing paths with him. The dentist said Ramirez's tooth was infected and he would be back again soon to have it treated. Survivors of the Night Stalker's brutal attacks described the criminal as having rotting teeth. The police installed an alarm button so that when Ramirez did show up at the dentist, the police would be informed. When the day came, the alarm malfunctioned and Ramirez got away with it again.
That's crazy. I can't believe he was able to get away and that the alarm malfunctioned. It sounds like technology wasn't very helpful back then. More evidence includes the same bullets were found in L.A. and San Francisco. Both a 22 and 25 semi-automatic pistol was being used in the shootings. Also, a young man in Orange County told officers about an orange Toyota driving around suspiciously. He got some of the license plate number and the description of the car. Once the media got the details out to the public requesting information about the vehicle, the detectives received a call from somebody claiming their friend's car had been stolen, and it matched that of the car the Night Stalker was thought to be driving. They managed to get the full license plate and locate the car in a parking lot. A woman called the police telling officers her father had befriended a man named Rick at the Greyhound bus station. He had a suspicion that Rick was the Night Stalker because Rick had told him about the murder of an Asian couple. He told the man he used a .22 semi-automatic pistol to commit the murder and that he was from El Paso. The father had been given the gun and taken it to Tijuana police. Officers retrieved the gun and found a boombox that had been stolen from one of the crime scenes. A stolen bracelet was handed in, which resulted in officers finding out Rick's full name. A police informant's wife's mother had been given a bracelet from her boyfriend, who got the bracelet from a friend called Rick in El Paso. The Night Stalker had previously been described to have worn a members-only jacket and an AC/DC cap, descriptions the mother herself gave of the man who had given the bracelet. She also described him as having bad teeth.
I'm glad that the woman reported that to the police. That is a really good evidence that led police to find out his name. When San Francisco Police Inspector Frank Falzon interviewed the boyfriend for information, he was hesitant to do so. After some pushing, the boyfriend revealed the full name of Rick to be Richard Ramirez. His picture was put in the paper for the people of California to see. Once police knew his name, they were able to find Richard Ramirez in the system. He'd been previously arrested on burglary and grand theft auto charges, and a mugshot had been taken. Police fed the screenshot to the media and announced a countywide hunt for the killer, encouraging the public to keep an eye out and contact police if there were any sightings.
I can't believe that he was already in the system and they still took so long to find him. That is so strange. He was eventually caught after hopping over several fences and attempting two more carjackings, and was eventually subdued by a group of residents, and one of them struck him over the head with a metal bar. The group held Ramirez down and beat him until police arrived and took him into custody. In the trial in Los Angeles Superior Court, Ramirez faced 13 murder counts and 30 other felony charges, included attempted murder, rape, sodomy, and oral copulation. He faced a 14th murder charge in San Francisco and attempted murder and sexual assault charges in Orange County. Ramirez was sentenced to die in California's gas chamber. His remarks to this were a big deal. See you in Disneyland. 24 years after this sentence, Ramirez had been on death row for more than 23 years. Ramirez died from B-cell lymphoma at age 53 on June 7, 2013.
That was a lot of evidence, but when you piece it together, that is how they were able to get a hold on Ramirez. I think it is crazy that he got away from the police twice and that he was able to commit so many crimes without being caught. It's a good thing that fingerprint analysis was able to identify his fingerprints since technology was very slim back then.
I agree. I think he was insane and had issues from his past. That gave him the motive to be a serial killer. I also think people stepping up and calling police helped identify Ramirez. Many people were definitely watching out for him and reported when they had any evidence about him. The public was a big help.
Good point. The police did the right thing to make a countywide search for him. I believe this concludes our podcast about Richard Ramirez. Bye.